It seems everything in the world today is lighting up opportunity to become a more conscious participant in life. And to quote today's guest, Chandra Sun Eagle, author of Looking Back on the Future, through the central sun, the light of Creator is sending waves of liquid truth, light, and love. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Stay tuned. Chandra, considering your connection to the Andes and your book titled Looking Back on the Future, it feels right for you to first share what is known in the Andean tradition as the Golden Age of Encounter.
The Golden Age of Encounter. Yes, this is a beautiful, beautiful description of the time that we are in or entering. What the prophecies of the Andes are referring to around the Age of Encounter is multifaceted. The first and primary aspect of meeting ourselves again, encountering the light being that we are, the light from which we come. And it's been so long since humanity has lived in that full embodiment of recognizing their spiritual nature and their light nature. So for the Andean people, this is a great adventure back home to meeting ourselves again truly and embodying the sun, the light, the children of the light that we are. Another facet to this prophecy around the Age of Encounter is it's a time that is said that once enough seeds have blossomed, seeds of consciousness within humanity, we will begin to encounter the time of the sixth sun, and our consciousness will raise to meet and match the vibrational frequencies of this golden age. So as more of us are awakening and activating those seeds of light within us, we're encountering more and more of our brothers and sisters around the globe because our light is reconnecting us and bringing us back into that synchronistic encounter with life. It is also a time, the golden age, of seeing everything as sacred. Everything on the earth, the plants, the animals, the, you know, other human beings, all of it as sacred, and therefore this recognition of the prime directive of creation and that all life is sacred. And so it's this really beautiful, multi-layered time that is happening, you could say, in waves. We are in this period of the Pachakuti, the time of overturning. Pacha is earth or cycle, and kuti means to turn over. So we are, closing out this grand cycle of 26,000 years. Within that cycle, there are different lengths of cycles. And, you know, we have this overturning, not just in a 26,000-year period, but we have multiple overturnings within that. And we're at the, you could say, the close of this 26,000-year period, entering into this golden age. First, we have to go through that, which is uprooting out of the last cycle, that which has been maybe hidden or in the dark, but also that which we have been constructing, the reality in our earthly life and our approach to it. That which does not fit with the golden age and is not in resonance with it has to be deconstructed, purified, transmuted, and brought into Aini, or sacred reciprocity, which then opens the doorways for us to enter into this golden age.
Yes, now is a time, as you are saying right now, that we have these ancient wisdoms from around the earth that are strikingly similar. They're all holding the same message, but from different traditions. And having access to these wisdom traditions is relatively new, in that the Andean traditions are there in South America, but now, because of travel and unlimited information sources, that tradition is known worldwide, as are so many others. And I'm wondering, how does your experience hold the tradition when you are fed from so many teachers and sources? I wonder if it ever feels like it gets diluted in some way.
Yes, it's been a very interesting journey in terms of my working in North America with teachers of Native American wisdom from the Lakota, primarily, some from the Hopi, some from the Chumash, and in Hawaii, teaching from Huna and from South America. And there have been times where, you know, I was very authentically drawn to these traditions from the inside. It wasn't like, oh, I'm, you know, sort of curious about that. It was a deep resonance within me that spoke to a tradition, perhaps, that I have lived in another time-space continuum, and there was a need to go down that path. I would say that the depth of my travels and study and remembering and all of that through the Andes has taken me to the core of those teachings and of that culture, than when I was working in the traditions of North America and Hawaii. I found the threads that all weave together, as you're saying. You know, there's so many similarities, but there were times for sure early on in my path where it was like, wow, what do I follow here? How do I hold this? Because I didn't want to dilute what was coming through from each lineage. The practice that I developed was a diligence to stay with the core roots, the deepest roots of each of those traditions, but also to allow at any moment, whether I'm, depending on who I'm working with, what circle I'm holding, allow the universality of each of those traditions to come through, but to speak through a particular culture, and to trust that that was exactly the cosmology and the languaging and the symbology of the cosmology that was needed, is needed for this, that particular moment. And so I've gotten comfortable with it. It's been a lot of medicine to get really anchored in again and rooted in. I've always felt that everything is evolving, and even the traditions in a lot of ways are evolving. And so I have had to make this a very strong heartfelt and soul-felt agreement to hold to the core truths of each of these lineages, and at the same time allow the expression of them to evolve a little bit through me. When I started asking, like, how do I hold all of this, when I had first moved to Kauai back in 2006, and there was even more coming in, and then the Huna tradition, and I was like, oh my God, like what am I doing here, guys? And what I came to learn was that the primary civilization of Lemuria was where the shamanic teachings and shamanic way of life was really primary, and then it disseminated out to these other regions, and there were other primary civilizations, but that universality of those threads weave back to source, but through that first primary civilization. And you know, when I went to the Andes and I met a dear sister, she's a ceremonialist as well, and she had a little shop, and it was like this portal opened up when we were in the shop, and we went really into these memories of being sisters in Peru in the Mochica era, and we have the same marking on our head and in this lifetime. And she was telling me about her people used to travel to the islands. I was like, oh, she's actually talking about like way back.
Right. Yeah.
Like kind of almost Lemurian times in that migration. And then up to North America as well. So it was like this whole vision of the, not just the condor eagle prophecy, but the condor eagle and whale. I don't necessarily speak of it because I haven't heard any other indigenous elders speak about that, but there was lines, migrational lines from the islands there. Right. So it helped me really synergize why and how I could bring all of this various cultural ways and information back home without diluting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was interesting because when I had this coca leaf reading, you know, there's certain questions and areas of questions, and then they've got the leaves in a cloth, and then they kind of shake it up and then open it and then pick up the leaves. And, you know, just with that, their breath and with their hand, they toss the leaves and then read how they land. And that was that moment of the Pacos seeing that I was going to write a book. And I didn't ask the question. I just asked if I was going to be returning to Peru because I really starting to root. I was had my land on Kauai and was really concentrating my energy there. And then they said, oh, you'll be going everywhere. And I was like, well, wait a minute, how can I go everywhere? And then
right.
they saw the stack of the book. Adolfo said, when you write this book, channel it from this lineage and don't blend other traditions in.
Mm.
And I was like, huh. Part of me was like, okay, I get that, but I don't know that I know how to fully do that. And if it is universal wisdom, but I got what he was saying. He was probably reading in my field that I walked in other traditions and not to water it down, just to make it about the Andean cosmology.
Just the way you spoke about the sacredness of everything, that's like the beginning and the end point, isn't it? Because it just is such a beingness. And when we can be there or work from there and live from there, it certainly is that compass, isn't it? It just really leads you in the right direction.
Yes, very much. And that is another aspect of the prophecy of this golden age and this time of encounter and meeting ourselves again, is that we are going to be led by the heart. And when we are in that reverence and that everything is sacred, we're really in that heart frequency.
Roland McCrady from the Heart Math Institute, they are driven through science, and then they've developed all of these different kinds of exercises. And then we have all the different traditions speaking to us. So it is quite an amazing time in that sense where everything seems to be leading us. And it's not only information like this, but the tumultuous changes on the planet that are going on. Earth needs to stretch and have a volcano here or a tornado there or something. And then I was going to ask you about the plants and plant medicine and what you see the plants doing. And then it was just this little light bulb goes off. The ayahuasca is so renowned around the world now, those ceremonies. And then the microdosing of psilocybin is becoming quite a tool for those that are experiencing difficulties with their mental and emotional aspects. So a lot's coming out to speak right now, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. I wanted to just touch on what you were saying right before you started talking about the plants and the plant teachers, about the various traditions and science. It's sort of this culmination of the same principles, but coming through these various ways. And that is another aspect of this prophecy of these times that we're in, is that there is a culmination of traditions and people from the four corners. It's evidence to me that the timeline of the Golden Age is very much infusing all people.
Yes.
We're in this world of chaos and what we would maybe call the dark night of the soul for humanity. And we can get caught up in just that because it is quite prevalent. But at the same time, there is evidence that at the same time of this purification and chaos, there is so much clarity around where we're being guided and led.
That's the way it is when you're dealing with the material world. There's what we could simplify and call the good and the bad. You're going to have these opposites occurring. You write, Chandra, that for you, entering the unknown presents exceptional moments of opportunity that hold the greatest potential for growth. And I'm wondering if you could share a personal experience of this.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Just let me see here what experience might be most relatable. You know, there was a time when I was living in Los Angeles, after university for 16 years, and I had sort of a love, and then I got to get out of this place for some time, but yet I didn't know where I was going, and it was still where I needed to be for many reasons. And then after my first vision questings in the early 2000s and being drawn back down to the Andes, there came a time when all of a sudden it was, okay, you're done. You're done here. You've completed your work here. And I had just finished building my perfect healing space in a beautiful home that had taken quite a long time and a lot of effort to pull through. I had a very, very successful clientele base and new people coming in. I loved all of them. And there was just so much that was blossoming and had blossomed and was continuing to feed a lot of nectar to me and others. And then I got the message that it was time to go. I wasn't sure where I was supposed to go. I got invited onto this river trip. Many, many, many things happened on that time. I came back home and it was like every street I was driving down, a recapitulation would happen. It was like I'd look in the rearview mirror and scenes of how many times I'd ridden my bike down there, how many seasons I had been through in this place. And then all of those scenes would just collapse. It was done. And it was happening very rapidly. I had to let go of everything. I walked away from the house, my perfect healing space, my relationship, my security, and all my clients. And it was like I had to go back to where almost like the PowerPoint of this pivotal moment in my life happened, because I could feel that literally there was, it was the first time I had really felt such a distinct separation from an aspect of myself. It was like this aspect of myself was holding the place there. And it was like, that was the only thing I need to do, which when I look in hindsight, it was like, how beautiful. It was like, I was just going towards myself. So yes, there was so much unknown and I had to let it all go. And yet it was undeniable. And so when I'm guiding people and helping people in that moment of like, oh my gosh, whatever it is I need to let go of, whether it's an internal construct, belief, or relationship, or job, the whole picture hasn't presented and there's not all the elements there. That is stepping into the unknown, which I think is probably quite relatable for most people.
It's just so lovely to have that wisdom that it is all cool. It's all in its own time and there's no need to put a pressure on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the traditions and with your experiences, there's a physicality to conscious dreaming, isn't there? How do you experience this, or what do you do with this? You wrote that there was kind of a rewiring of neural pathways.
Yes, absolutely. So when you say, you know, the physicality to this, I go to the practices that are really, you know, kind of at the heart of the Andean tradition and many traditions. And in the Andes, our luminous energy field holds the resonance receptors, the imprints of all of our conditioning. And that is the outer layer that then informs our mental body and our emotional constructs, our mental constructs, and ultimately then our physical health and well-being and presence here in the physical world. And so this rewiring and neuroplasticity that takes place, yes, we need physical supplements at times that are very helpful. The plant teachers, plant medicines can help us with that, as well as other supplements. But for the shaman, it has to begin upstream. The rewiring of our physical brain and neurological pathways begins by this, you could say, rewiring of our luminous architecture. and reorienting our energetic structure to greater forces, like our power places, our apus, our mountains, to spirit, to our power animals, spirit guides, these types of relationships that help us to rewire first our luminous energy field, which then assists the purification and release of the old constructs held in the mind, which, and also the old emotional accumulated energies. And then we're able to more easily rewire our brains and our neurological pathways.
Can you share a practice that you do with people as a shamanic healing session, something that might be very universal for everyone?
First thing that comes through is bringing me back to our first moments of this conversation, and that we are awakening to our light, the light being that we are. And a morning practice of waking up and facing the sun and recognizing or acknowledging that the sun is carrying light from source, from the central sun. And as it touches us and touches our third eye and touches our heart and touches our bellies, it awakens the frequencies of the source encoded light within our DNA to awaken. And that practice is so simple and yet so prophetic in its ability to attune us first thing in the morning before we get into our busy days and start activating perhaps thought patterns and ways of approaching the day that are maybe outdated and aren't serving us or creating resistance. So this simple practice of going out first thing in the sun and attuning ourselves and calibrating to what our innate being inside of us is in ultimate resonance with, and reestablishing the, not that we're ever separated from light or source, but reestablishing that truth within our minds is a very powerful practice.
Yeah, and I just love that you use the word calibrated, because it is very individual. Mm-hmm. So strengthening.
Yeah, it is so true what you say about we're each unique, and we're working maybe with a little something different within our own soul's journey and our own awakening. And I was having this full moon gathering with people that I've been working with, and they each had a question around, well, so what do we do at this time? Like, how can we participate more or recalibrate ourselves with what's coming in? I could give some general practices for everybody to do. And yet, because each individual is unique and has employed different approaches to life and have set ways, like some people are very mental and they want to use their will, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not working the way it was, so they need to learn how to relax, where some people have maybe been a little too passive in their co-creation and they need to step it up a notch. So it is all very unique. And yet for all of us to continually attune our focus to Creator's plan, right, and for us to come back home to that, it just brings, I think, so much joy and then sympathetic resonance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And in speaking about the Andean tradition, they have seven what are called siwas, or universal laws, at the core of philosophy or teachings. And I'm wondering, are they comparable to the Ten Commandments or perhaps Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements?
I definitely would say that there are universal principles within the siwas that relate to many other cultures and traditions. The siwas, even though, in this myth, this is this ladder of light that Viracocha or Creator dropped down for mankind to raise themselves back up into their authentic, true nature and oneness with the creator within them, and to bring their consciousness back there. But I have experienced this ayahuasca. It's more like almost like a flower, and there's various petals. So there's not such a linear way. And as we know, you know, linearity is more of a Western mind construct. Mm-hmm. Indigenous people live in more of this spiral aspect. So, you know, when I was first asked to write this book, I couldn't get past a certain point. I had to put it down because it was creating a lot of bound energy for me, which was, I think, the opposite of what, yes.
what you wanted to tell about.
Well, exactly. I was like, huh. So at that point, I recognized that I needed to live more of each of the Siwas. So at that stage, as I was reflecting on the seven Siwas, I was asking what was the doorway for me or the gateway of those particular teachings to sort of lift me out of the place that I was in with it. They all kind of fold in. Can't do one without the other.
Right.
Blossoming. And I keep having moments of like, oh, that's another aspect of Coyote. And even how I am bringing through what I've learned and remembered within myself, I can't be static with it. I can't do it the same.
Your book, Looking Back on the Future, definitely runs through those seven universal truths beautifully, and they do offer that opportunity for anyone, I think, who is interested to look at things from this viewpoint, to have some very good nonlinear experiences. In all of your work here, what's been most difficult for you? What's been your greatest challenge to move on to the next place? And maybe it was the way you were writing your book. That sounded like a big moment when you thought, I need to do something else right now, and then the book will come out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say that it's been accepting that I'm still evolving into me as I'm making this journey back home, not to stop at any one peak, to walk down the other side.
Right.
And to know that where my heart is taking me, where my consciousness is taking me, because I have a very pure intent with it, that it's okay. I can let go of maybe how I once said something or did something, and to understand that I'm evolving as well. And within that change, it's okay. When you're leading or you're a voice, I can only bring it through what I've masticated, what I've learned through. I'm not interested in just repeating something that my teachers told me.
No, well, that's why you are where you're at. You've written a lovely book. You can tell the depth that it was written from, and you are successful with your healing work because you are living it and you're allowing yourself to go continually with it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. To close, let me just say, I really loved hearing what you wrote in your book about the Mayans calling the new people those that are made from honey. That's a very good visual and feel and everything. I love it. The new people. May we all become the new people.
Yes, and when we become the flower, so we actually move out of beyond the hummingbird, but we become the flower for the hummingbird. Mm. We become the nectar for life and for all the other hummingbirds. That resonates for me as something to really cultivate, the imagery of that, that I could be a flower that is naturally a spring of sweetness and nectar, and that I won't run out. There is no running out. There is no drying up, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I just would love to send blessings out to everyone who is listening to this, and prayers that your heart and forgiveness and acceptance and self-love will open the gateways for you to receive more of the frequencies that so many people from around the world are focused upon, and for the benefit of all life and all beings.
Chandra Sun Eagle, author of Looking Back on the Future, or anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are on the usual platforms, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.